You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
A Man of Good Hope is a new musical theater work by the South African troupe Isango Ensemble. It's based on a book by South African journalist Johnny Steinberg and chronicles the story of a young Somali refugee as he flees Mogadishu, first to Kenya, then to Ethiopia, South Africa, and finally to the United States. It's making its U.S. premiere at the Brooklyn Academy of Music's Howard Gilmore Opera House, running from tomorrow through this Sunday. And I'm very pleased to welcome co-founders of the Isango Ensemble, Mark Dornford May and Pauline Malafana, to our show now. Hello.
Hi, thanks.
Mark, you're the director of the Isango Ensemble. What's the company's mission, and when was it founded?
We founded about 2000, so it's about 16, 17 years old now. And when we first started, the country had only had democracy for about 6 years. So I suppose our initial sort of mission was to try and offer opportunities to young South Africans who previously had had no chance of exploring the theatre.
So all of the members are South Africans?
Yeah, everyone in the company is South African.
And where do you generally perform?
We perform in Cape Town, but since we started, we've more or less toured the world, I suppose.
Pauline, I introduced you as the musical director of the Isango Ensemble. Are you also a performer?
Yes, I am. I'm first and foremost the performer.
Well, looking over the material about your group, are most of your works adaptations of classical operas like The Magic Flute and La Boheme translated into a kind of a South African idiom?
Yes, all of our works. Our first work was Carmen, which we did on stage and then was turned into a film. But we always take, classical stories. But most importantly, we take stories that we can relate to, that has, have stories that people from the township can easily relate to, stories that people can learn from. And as Mark had said before, that we were a new democracy and we wanted to find something that would bring, all races together.
Is this the first time you've adapted a book?
No, it's the second time in Fatland. We did Christmas Carol, believe it or not, set in South Africa.
But this is quite different.
This is very, very different. We had a problem with the snow with Christmas Carol.
And looking at it, a book that I remember, it's not the sort of thing I would immediately think of as adaptable to a musical. Or would you even call this a musical? Would you call it an opera? Because so much of it is
difficult to, I think it's difficult to define in that way. We do have what I suppose technically are arias in the piece, mm-hmm. where characters explore their inner thoughts. So it's on a cusp, and I think the wonderful thing about working for me with the ensemble is we don't really make those definitions between musicals or opera or. It's the best way of possibly telling the story that we try and concentrate on. To go back to your question, it was very difficult to start with adapting the book. And I suppose up to now, our work has sort of celebrated South Africa. Whereas the book takes quite a strong and hard look at where we are now as a country. So that was quite a change for us.
People may be surprised, Americans may be surprised, that many of the issues that we hear about immigrants in this country and in Europe are also issues in South Africa.
Yeah, they are. I mean, very serious.
This is the story of a young boy, Asad Abdullahi, who flees Mogadishu after his mother's killed by soldiers and travels across Africa, eventually comes to the United States, based on a true story that Johnny Steinberg wrote. He met Asad?
Yes, he met Asad, and everything in the book is Assad's recollection of his life.
So you have four actors playing this one character because it covers a whole period of his life, from when he's 8 years old, when his mother's killed?
Yes, it's actually five.
Five actors, I'm sorry.
Yeah, but it's two boys, so the two boys share So one night is one boy and one night is another one. So it is four a night. So they would represent from when he was a boy until he was, a man. And, that's the journey.
What happened to the rest of his family when his mother was killed when he was 8 years old? And what did he do?
His father had disappeared. He hadn't seen his father for about a week before his mother was killed. It was a sort of a clan civil war in Mogadishu, and he was a member of the Darud clan. And the militia at that point were looking for Darud men, so Assad's father had sort of fled into hiding, leaving his mother apparently safe. You know, the idea was that the women and children were non-combatants and therefore would be safe. Very sadly, Assad finds in the end that during his journey he sort of lived quite closely to where his father was, but they never made contact again, and the father died before Assad ever saw him.
And Pauline, he's taken in by your character, a cousin named Yindi. Mm-hmm. What's her story? Why does she agree to take Assad in?
I don't think it was a question of agreeing. You know, it was a sense of responsibility. You know, it's family. You know, if someone comes to me even now and says I am so and so Malfane, I would not think twice. I would take that person in, and you know, look after that person. So, excuse me. So when Assad was taken to Yindi, you know, Yindi had no choice but to look after him, and I'm sure she was not happy doing that, because, you know, she had her own problems. You know, she,
and then she shot, and Assad has to take care of her. Yeah, and eventually they wind up in a refugee camp in Kenya, and then Yindi gets a visa to come to the United States, but she can't take him along.
But she can't take him along. But she promises to, you know, when she gets here, she'll work very hard that, you know, she brings him over. And she does that. But unfortunately, her father was not a really nice man. So they left him in
Ethiopia.
In Ethiopia. Yeah,
he goes to Ethiopia, but he's rejected by Yindi's family there because he's not a close blood relative.
That's right.
Yeah.
How old is he at this point, and how does he survive?
About 10. He's about 10.
How does he survive?
He survives on the street. He meets three boys who make their living selling water, because the area he's left is quite a desert area, and he survives on the street. So by the time he's 12 years old, he's had a life that most of us would have crushed most of us.
And then he marries and goes to South Africa because he's heard it's easier to make a living there. Did he have any family there?
He has a cousin there and an uncle there. There's a huge Somali, or there was quite a large Somali population in South Africa. It was considered, he's scared of actually trying to make the journey to America by himself. He's scared of trying to make the journey to Europe. So South Africa seemed an easier option for him.
Did Johnny Steinberg work on the script with you?
Yes, he did. We had a few workshops where he was involved. He lives in England, but he came over for the workshops.
And this also was done as a production with Young Vic in London.
Yeah, it was. And the book, in fact, originally was sent to me by David Land, the artistic director of the Young Vic. So it was David's idea originally.
It's a very complicated story, and you had to translate it into a musical. It's easier when you're when you're adapting Carmen, isn't it? It's already been worked out for you.
Yeah. Well, there was the plot. There was the narrative. It was the thing. The problems we hit, and are things like, how do you represent a journey of 4,000 miles on the stage? I mean, and make sense of it. And so that's where music came in and helped us enormously.
I'm speaking with Mark Dornford May and Pauline Malefane of the Isango Ensemble, their production, A Man of Good Hope, a title that has special significance, I imagine, in South Africa, where there's a cape of such a name, will be performed at the Brooklyn Academy of Music's Howard Gilman Opera House from tomorrow night through Sunday, limited run, and then I'm assuming off to somewhere else?
We, in fact, then go back home to South Africa,
In Assad's case, his travels don't end. Mm-hmm. His relatives teach him to become a shopkeeper. He's able to open his own shop. But then more misfortune and violence strike because he's a Somali in South Africa.
Yeah, basically. I mean, there was a huge outbreak of xenophobic violence in the 2008 in the townships.
Complaining that these immigrants were taking our jobs?
That was part of the argument, certainly.
Even
I
though
don't think it's you know, specifically because he was Somali.
Yes.
It is because he was an outsider. He was seen as a foreigner. You know, it could have been Chinese, could have been American, could have been English, you know. But it's a very unfortunate situation.
Well, in this country, we think of Africans. We tend to think of Africans as all being pretty much the same. There are even some people here, I think, who think Africa is a country. But to Africans, it's easy to spot whether somebody is from West Africa, East Africa, North Africa, Somalia or Kenya or Ghana.
I mean, it's easy to know that you're not South African. You know, if I'm South African, it's easy to tell that, you know, the next person is not South African, but definitely African. Because, you know, we're not really, as South Africans, we don't really travel to the African, the rest of the African continent. So I might not know whether he's Somalia or he's from Congo, but I know that he's African, but definitely not South African.
I imagine this production was scheduled before the November elections here in this country and the new travel bans. So is it just a coincidence that you're performing it in the United States at this time?
Yeah, we started to plan the production sort of nearly 18 months ago, so before any of the recent travel bans had happened in the United States. But of course it makes the production very pertinent now because Assad's whole dream and desire is to get to the United States, which he feels is a place of hope and refuge.
Well, he originally thought South Africa would be such a place. He set up shop in a township where there weren't any shops, so he wasn't taking anyone's jobs. He had fair prices, gave people credit, and yet they still went after him.
Yeah, I mean, the terrible thing is there's huge, huge poverty, and that can lead to terrible jealousy and a terrible sense of failure. And what was wrong in South Africa but was also wrong about xenophobia anywhere in the world is that instead of blaming governments or the people who are actually controlling things, you take it out on the weaker person standing next to you.
In the show, he tells Johnny that he doesn't want to read his book. Mm. Why? And do you know, has he seen the show?
No.
Well, he's living here in the United States. Can he see it? Do you know if he's going to go to the Howard Gilman?
No, he doesn't want to. He doesn't want to see it. He, as Pauline said just now, I think to read, he read the first few pages of Johnny's book and then told Johnny that he didn't want to read any more. I think it's living through his life and then reading about it, seeing it on a page or on the theatre show would be an extraordinary emotional roller coaster for him, I think.
How did you go about writing the music and creating the dances? As the story moves from Somalia to Kenya and then to Ethiopia and South Africa, do the musical styles reflect the various cultures?
I should think so. Obviously, we our musical director for this, in particular this show, is you know, a very, very talented young man and, you know, has listened and has researched and, you know, listened to a lot of African music. Obviously, you know, he had to listen to Kenyan music, Ethiopian music, you know, all the journey that Assad does.
And think about the musical instruments that are employed in those different places.
Exactly.
Drums, reeds,
yeah.
Marimbas.
Yes. You know, it's our thing to, you know, even when we're not looking at a Somali story, if we're looking at a South African story or adapting a classical to a South African, we use whatever we can find in the township. And so, but the music, you know, it's not a matter of someone composing the music. It's the text that determines where the music must go. And you know, so we'd read the text and sort of listen to what the text is saying, and the music is created through in that way.
And it's been performed in London, I imagine, because of the collaboration with the Young Vic.
Yes, we played at the Young Vic for 6 weeks in November. Yeah.
And now, I'm assuming this is the US premiere.
Yes, it is, very much so.
And then you go back.
And we go back home, and then it starts on a big, sort of a bigger tour next year, where we do Australia and various other places.
What have the reactions been to the show in South Africa? Because it is critical of at least some South Africans.
Well, it's Cape Town that has seen it. For now, and you know, the reaction has been quite, you know, pleasing. People are quite pleased at the fact that this story is being told. Hopefully, it's going to help with you know. I'm not sure if we'll ever find a solution to, you know, all of this xenophobia attacks, but at least people will start talking about these things, and people will understand where the Assads are coming from. Because, you know, you see Assad coming into the township, you don't know where he's from, where he's been through, or how he got there, or why he's there. And because of your own past and your own problems, you don't really pay attention to it, and I think that's where the misunderstanding comes from. Because even Assad himself went to South Africa not knowing, or, you know, didn't have a clue what he was getting himself into.
If he were trying to come to the United States today, he would have some difficulty because he's from Somalia originally.
Yeah, which is terribly, terribly sad.
Did the cast talk about these issues? Have to work some of these things out during the rehearsal process?
Yeah, we did. We it was quite a painful process for us, because most of the cast come or live in the township still. So we're talking about things which happen round the corner or down the street. So it was a big exploration for all of us. And I think the important thing to say is the outbreaks of violence in the townships were appalling, but that's partly because there's a lack of police, there's a lack of control. Xenophobia is not confined to South African townships, very, very sadly.
Where were they?
You know, it's a very sad situation.
Is this the first time your company is in the United States or in New York?
No, we've been to New York several times. We brought Magic Flute here, and we've brought Midsummer Night's Dream.
At BAM?
No, they were at the New Victory Theatre. And then we've toured to Chicago and L.A. and various other places.
Does the cast have a role in creating the music?
Oh, definitely. In everything, really. That's how we work as the company. Mark, the director, gives us the opportunity to be creative as well, you know, as the cast. And so, you know, having said that, Mandisi, who's the musical director, has composed the music, bulk of it. But some of it, you know, the cast will come up with, you know, a song or a scene, or, you know, just workshop for 5 minutes and come back, and we present it in, you know, in front of each other. We work a lot as the, you know, the company.
But when you're doing something like Carmen, you're still relying a lot on what Bizet wrote?
Of course, yes. We don't really
here,
have
this
choice.
Is all original music.
Yeah. But even when we take Carmen, the music gets sort of imagined through a South African prism.
In this case, the music includes hand clapping, foot stomping, a lot of different approaches to percussiveness. And the dancers are all dancing barefoot.
Yeah. I don't think we've ever done a show where people aren't barefoot, if you want the truth. People like working in that way. I think it makes people feel grounded.
Well, thank you so much for being on our show. Audiences can see A Man of Good Hope at BAM's Howard Gilman Opera House from tomorrow through this coming Sunday. And then the company goes back to South Africa for, I'm assuming, a new production that you've already been working on?
We haven't started work on it yet, but we are going to start soon.
And who's the lucky composer you're going to be adapting?
We're looking at St. Matthew's Passion.
Oh, my.
So it's a very different sort of piece.
And we hope to see you again sometime soon.
Thank you very much for having us.
We thank you so much for being here. Pauline Malafani and Mark Dornford May, the co-founders of the Isango Ensemble, Man of Good Hope, is at the Brooklyn Academy of Music tomorrow through this coming Sunday. You don't have much time to see it, but it's definitely worthwhile.